There he is, Tom. Let's land on him. We'll cripple his pride.
Josh, he's in a pride of lions. We're on a magic carpet. He'd rip through us like we were a ball of yarn.
Going back to a episode a couple weeks ago, you talked about Knives Out.
Yes.
Right?
Oh, my gosh. Did you see Knives Out?
I did see Knives Out.
Oh, my gosh.
I watched it last night.
What did you think of Knives Out?
It was really good.
Right.
I called it like three quarters of the way through the movie, though.
Okay.
I mean, I wasn't upset with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I still think it all comes together in a way that I bought it this week, and I think I'm still probably going to enjoy it, even knowing what I know.
Yeah, we do this thing called renting movies.
No, blah, impossible.
We do it through Fandango now.
Okay.
It's like $4 or $5 a movie. You just throw it on, watch it in 4K.
What's really interesting about the purchase, though, so I bought the Best Buy exclusive Steelbook, which I've started to do for movies that I really enjoy, and it's a very competitive practice because, as you recently told me, there's an entire secondary market for Steelbooks. And I've noticed casually before that if I went to Best Buy, like, you know, the day after a movie came out, all the Steelbooks would be gone. And now I'm like, ah, I know why, because there's a little market for this. But anyway, I got the Steelbook for Knives Out. It's very handsome. It looks like a mystery novel. It's got like, it's, you know, the Steelbook is designed to look like a faded book. And on the side, instead of like saying like Blu-ray and the studio name, it says the author's name and all this stuff. Very cool. But it comes in a slipcover packaging. And if you're familiar with the marketing for this movie, you'll know that iconic like circle of knives that you've seen in all the trailers that's in this house. It's like a bunch of knives that are attached to a steel structure in a circle, right?
Yeah.
Well, what I found out online is that if you take the steelbook and you take the slipcover and you put the steelbook in the slipcover backwards, the circle of knives perfectly aligns with the member of the family who did the crime. And I think it's one of the coolest packaging Easter eggs I've ever seen. Although it's also a gigantic spoiler if you've never seen the movie and accidentally put your slipcover on backwards. So heads up, don't do that.
Well, speaking of using knives in a way that they weren't meant to be used, this is A Cast of the Past, where best friends get together to talk about old games in a new light. I am Josh.
And I'm Tom.
And today we're going to be talking about Aladdin.
And The Lion King.
Look at that.
But
a double episode.
Yes. The first episode, I think, to my knowledge, that we've ever been requested specifically to do by a listener.
And I think this is pretty awesome because it's one of those things where we get to play two games at the same time and then talk about our experiences with them and bounce back and forth with how similar the games are, but how different they are at the same time. I mean, one has a magic carpet in it.
And the other has a magic monkey in it. So, you know. Also, it's technically two games in one episode. So we're lazy and it gets a lot of our work done for us. So either way, we win. You know?
So to kind of clear this all up, we are playing the Aladdin Lion King remaster that came out on the Switch, Xbox, PS4 a couple months ago.
Yes.
However, we are going to be talking about them like they are from the 90s.
Well, to be fair, this is a pretty good preservation of these games. I mean, I know our cutoff is a game has to be at least 3 years old, but I think we can make exceptions if, like, you know, it's a well-preserved re-release, technically, you know. Can we talk real quick about the specifics of this edition? Because I did want to say, this is, like, one of the most impressive re-releases I think I've ever seen. And honestly, it's a kind of special treatment that I wish more classic games would get.
Yeah, I do like some of the revamped ones that they did, like when they went back and they did DuckTales.
Mm-hmm.
They added some new things to it. They cleaned it up. They made it look like the actual cartoon that was on TV at the time. They made it look just more modern. With this, though, they took the original games and they fine-tuned them. But you still have the option to play it the way that it originally came out, too.
Yes. And also just in terms of like presentation, you can play it in its original, I think it was like 360p aspect ratio if you want, which is not, which, you know, is kind of hilarious on the giant TVs we have nowadays. You can expand it. There's multiple kind of presentation modes. You can play it with a CRT filter on it or other kinds of classic kind of effects to make it look, you know, like you're sitting in front of your old boxy TV. And just like the level of historical inclusion, we'll talk into specifics about like which version of which game we'll be playing. But like, you know, this is a release that includes multiple versions of a game to give you a sense of like how it was ported. And there's even bonus features in here. I mean, you know, we like, you know, I'm a movie nerd. I like my special features, and historical games don't usually get that. But there are behind the scenes documentaries. There's like Q&As with the creators on here. I think that's pretty dang cool, and it's something I'd like to see more companies do.
And going back to talking about games that, you know, we haven't really seen this done with, this is actually the second wave of games that came out like this. And the first set was the Disney Afternoon Collection.
Okay.
It had Chippendales, Darkwing Duck, Tailspin, and I think DuckTales on it. But that collection got the same amount of love that this did. But I think this set here had such a big following that they had to kind of go all out for these two games.
I agree with you on that. These are iconic licensed games. Like, these are games that if you ever get into a retro discussion with either like hardcore gamers or people who maybe just enjoyed it in their childhood and then let the hobby go, these are two that people instantly remember and bring up. So I agree with you. These are something that kind of deserved that special polish.
Whether it's, oh, the Aladdin game for the Super Nintendo or the Sega Genesis, or, oh, do you remember how hard the Lion King was? Or do you remember how hard the Magic Carpet level was? Or do you remember how hard the Stampede level was? Like, people talk about those. And like you said, not even like the hardcore retro people. It's a lot of the just normal everyday people who've grown up with a Sega Genesis or a Super Nintendo. Like, they remember those moments specifically.
Yes. So why don't we get into them to stir that nostalgia a little bit? So we're going to go one game at a time, and Josh is going to lead us into the first title. Josh, what are we starting with?
The year is 1993, and a wonderful game named Aladdin arrived on the Sega Genesis.
More like a street rat of a game, am I right?
I don't know. See, a lot of people say the Super Nintendo version is a lot better than the Sega Genesis, which they were made by two different companies. So the Sega Genesis version was made by Virgin Games, published by Sega and Disney Software, of course. But I think that the Genesis version is better than the Super Nintendo version. I think the music is better. Tommy Tallarico crushing it, like he always does in his games.
Was he the composer?
But I think, yes, he was.
Okay.
I think the music in this game was top notch. The level design goes on a little bit at times, and I think the difficulty is a little too punishing.
Okay.
And now I understand back in the day, you know, spending $40, $50, $60 on a game, especially something like this, you got to get your money's worth out of it. I think the game has like 7 or 8 levels total, but the levels are a little bit longer. You have limited continues like normal. But the game follows the story of Aladdin to a certain extent. But, you know, it has to, you know, stray away every now and then. Like, do you remember that time where Aladdin was in Agrabah and then he went out to the desert? And then he went back to Agrabah.
Oh, yeah. He just took a detour for no reason.
Then he went in the Cave of Wonders. Yeah. And then he went back to the desert. And then he was jumping on top of flamingos. First off, like, why is he so rude to animals in this game? He jumps on top of a camel's hump to spit at people and kill them.
Well, we all know camel spit is fatal. I mean, if you're in a dangerous situation, you just have to resort to it, you know.
I'm surprised PETA isn't all over this game.
Yeah, well, it just reveals the hypocrisy of PETA. They're very selective in what they get upset about.
The big difference between the Genesis version and the Super Nintendo version, besides it being two completely different games, is in the Genesis version, Aladdin has a sword. And you actually, like, kill people with this sword.
Oh, that's a degree of violence I'm surprised Disney was willing to endorse. Josh, before we get into the senseless murder, I'm just curious. You've mentioned separate versions, but who was the developer of the Super Nintendo version?
Oh, that was good old Capcom.
Oh, the legends themselves.
Back in their heyday, you know, making Street Fighter 2, and then making Goof Troop, and then making Aladdin. Actually, I think Goof Troop came out after Aladdin.
Capcom's three most iconic titles, Street Fighter, Goof Troop, and then Aladdin.
Yep, exactly.
Now, that was that version present on this collection?
It was not.
Okay.
So on this version here, you only got the Sega Genesis version. So there's three different modes to this, which was the original version, the original release, the final cut version, which actually, think of it as like a day one patch almost. You would actually, you get like extra, like hidden bonus stages. You have bosses have different patterns and stuff like that, so it wasn't the same that it was from before. Kind of a more updated version of the same original game. And then you have the Japanese version, which didn't really have that much of a difference from what I played of it. Some music keys were a little bit different here and there, but other than that, you had that.
Okay, interesting.
Well, other than that, that's what you got. And then you also had the Game Boy version of Aladdin, or you had the Game Boy and the Game Boy Color version.
Terrific.
Which is the same exact game,
just compressed.
Handheld version. Yeah, and the music's awesome. I actually played it and beat it too. But it's seriously like the same levels, the same design. Like, it's weird. It's like a weird copy paste to put it on a Game Boy to be able to get the same exact console experience on a handheld at that time.
And it doesn't lose anything in the translation. Like, no. It's just compressed. Wow. That's that for the time.
I'm surprised with the actual art design to the game. Like, it is beautiful. For the Game Boy. For the Genesis, this is like watching the movie almost. Like, the artwork to it, the art style to it. And I know you'll probably talk about that a little bit when you get into Lion King, but it's like watching like a Saturday morning Disney cartoon almost. Like, it's so lifelike, and like everything looks almost hand-drawn, but not really. Yeah. Now you go through the stages. Now you got your, you know, you're running away from the guards in Agrabah. You got going to the desert.
You could say you're one step ahead of the law, man.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You go into the Cave of Wonders. You meet the genie.
Have you ever had a friend like the genie, would you say?
You know, I never had a friend like him.
Oh, wow.
Now, the only weird thing about the game, though, is there's not many characters from the movie in it.
Okay. Is Prince Ali Fabulous He in it?
Prince Ali is not in the game.
Oh, wow. He's a sight lovely to see. How could he not be in the game?
So, Aladdin's in it, of course.
I would hope.
I don't remember seeing Abu. The magic carpet's in it. Mm-hmm. The genie is not in it, but he kind of is. His face is on certain things, but he's not actually like a lively character in it.
Okay.
The genie stage is kind of like you're going around, like you're going inside of the Never Had a Friend Like Me song, like bouncing around and stuff, but it's not, he's like not actually present as an actual character in the game. Jasmine's not in it. The Sultan's not in it. You got Jafar at the end. You have Iago. He pops up every now and then. He's actually a boss battle in the game too.
Okay.
But it's like a really quick boss battle. And Jafar is in it at the end, which Jafar turns into a snake in that final battle for like the last couple seconds of it, because it's really quick in and out boss battle. As long as you understand the pattern and you have a lot of apples, you're good. But it's really crazy that there are a lot of characters from the movie weren't in the game. And I don't know if it's just due to budgeting or trying to cram everything into, you know, the story that they were trying to tell, because it's, I mean, you're trying to draw out something very linear in a playable way, and it doesn't really translate too well unless it was going to be like you almost doing the Can't Wait to Be King level, but it would be the Prince Ali song. You know what I mean? Like, this, okay. I don't see that, how that could translate for them, but.
Okay, I see what you mean. Yeah, like, they just couldn't come up with a clever enough, you know, solution to how does this work. So I have a question. Can you explain what the primary kind of game mechanics are then? Is this just like a jump and slash, hack and slash 2D platformer, or is there something more to it?
So there is a lot of run, jump, hack and slash, but there's also climbing. There's a level where you're flying on the magic carpet where you're kind of dodging obstacles. It's sometimes in the middle of the levels, you're climbing on the magic carpet and you're fighting stuff as it's kind of set on its own path, though. It's the only thing that sucks about it. You can't control it yourself. But it's there's a lot of adventures. There's not different ways you can go, because when you look at it and you're like, oh, I can go over here, I can go up there, you kind of get the idea of Sonic the Hedgehog, where you have multiple different ways to go through a level, when in fact the game wants you to go one particular way, you need to go this way. But the problem is the difficulty in the game kind of hurts that. Because, oh, I need to jump on this platform. Well, there's a guy throwing daggers on this platform. No matter when I jump, I'm going to get hit by a dagger or by him.
Mm-hmm.
So I found myself kind of getting stuck when it got to a lot of the platforming side of it, because it was like almost like Mega Man, which is funny because this one wasn't made by Capcom, but it was, you got to know when you got to get hit to be able to progress through, because then you have that little bit of time where you're kind of invincible because you got hit already.
Okay. So I have a question then about what you're saying, mentioning difficulty and things like that. So did Aladdin feature a rewind feature?
It did.
Did you find yourself using it at all? Or I know you're very much a purist. You like, you know, you like rising above challenges, very much like your hero,
John
Cena.
The only time I used it was on the magic carpet level and part of the final boss until I understood what the pattern was. Other than that, I was as pure as I could be.
Okay. Okay.
I mean, it's a nice feature to have, especially because, you know, kids nowadays, they can't do it. They quit. Back in our day.
I know somebody who...
We didn't have rewind features.
Yeah. All these snowflakes who need their handheld through their games. Did you find this more or less challenging than Cuphead?
So I made several comments as I was playing it to Becca, and I was looking at it, I was like, you know, I beat Cuphead, I beat Dark Souls, why is this game giving me such a problem right now? Like, I just couldn't, like, I was like, I need the jump, but the problem is like the hitboxes were just a little off, and I'm like, look, and I'm like landing on a platform and I'm falling directly through it.
Mm-hmm.
And then like I would go back and I would jump on it again and I would land perfectly, and I'm like, what am I missing? Like, it's me versus now the game design almost. And it was I was getting frustrated. It wasn't as difficult as Cuphead or Dark Souls, but it was just more annoying when it came to that. But I mean, overall, I enjoyed my time with it.
Okay.
I mean, it is kind of dated, but like I said, it has a place in history in the gaming in the 16-bit era. And it was pretty well received. I mean, it's sitting at like an 8 out of 10 through a lot of like game critics and stuff. I mean, the game is known for its difficulty, but I mean, I don't know. It's good.
You, as far as you're concerned, the difficulty shouldn't be a complaint. You're just like, rah, enjoy for what it is.
Yeah. I mean, 4 million copies of the game were sold, mm-hmm. right? It was the third best-selling Genesis game of all time.
Interesting. Wow.
So like, what are the
top?
What
are the top two? Is it like Sonic 2, another Sonic, and then this?
It's Sonic and then Sonic 2.
Wow.
And the only reason I think it beats Sonic 2 is because Sonic 2 came with the console after the second wave of the console came out.
That makes sense, because that's like why Wii Sports is considered one of the top selling games of all time. It's just because it came with the Wii, you know.
But you know what, though? And I will say this. And this might be kind of a hot take, but take it for what you will. The NES era had a lot of video game based movies or TV shows that sucked.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think the Genesis era did. Like, there was like banger after banger after banger that came out.
Okay.
Like,
it's an interesting take.
Aladdin's really good. Mm-hmm. Goof Troop, like I said, was awesome. Well, okay, the Mighty Max game wasn't that good.
Oh, no.
It's Mighty Max. I don't know. Maybe Lion King is good.
Oh, whoa, whoa. Let's not get into some spoiler territory. Let's save that. We got to...
But overall, though, I think it's a great rendition. If it's on sale, pick it up. If you have a Sega Genesis, you'll probably find this at a yard sale or a flea market for like $2 or $3, apparently, because there's 4 million of them floating around in the world. So, I would definitely play Aladdin. I wouldn't recommend like stressing out over it. Mm-hmm. Play it on this collection so you have the rewind features, so you can kind of enjoy your time with it.
Terrific. Okay. For this episode, we each only played our assigned game. So I am going to get into Aladdin. I'm looking forward to it. And yeah, I can't wait to check it out. Josh, I need to make sure that we're ready to go back to that special point in history. Are you ready to dive down into the research questions with me?
You know, take me for a ride.
All right. So The Lion King was the highest grossing film of 1994, but what was the second highest grossing film?
Of 1994?
Yes.
I don't know.
It was the Best Picture winner of that year, Forrest Gump.
That was 1994?
It was.
Man, I thought that was 97. I'm so old.
Nope, 1994. So continuing on, there was an actor sadly passed away in 1994 who is noteworthy for being one of the live-action Jokers. Who do you know who that actor was?
Oh, was it the it was the one from the original Adam West series, right?
Yes, yes. Do you remember his name?
I should know it, but I don't, and I'm a horrible person for it.
Oh, it's okay. It was Cesar Romero who,
yes, he was I knew that because I was going to say Hail Caesar.
He was very famous for his mustache, which he refused to shave. So his Joker had a mustache underneath. The final question. So The Lion King actually launched a TV and film franchise. So not counting the 2019 live action remake, how many sequel and or prequel stories have been made for The Lion King? Just throw out a number.
Okay.
If you want.
So wait, we're talking about sequels and prequels.
Yes. There are there's a specific number. If you'd want to count them out, that's fine. Yeah.
Yep. So you have The Lion King, uh-huh, which that doesn't count, but you got Lion King 1.5 with Timon and
Pumbaa.
You got, no, it's Pimba. I do that to Becca all the time. Oh. No, I do it to Becca all the time. She's always like, it's Pumbaa. I go, yeah, that's Pimba.
Playing mind games with me. Okay, but yes, that is one of them.
So you got 1.5. You got 2, which is Simba's Pride.
Yes.
You got 3, which is the one that I think has to do with Scar, or that was Pride, but I know that there's a 3, and I think there's another Timon and Pumbaa, which I want to say 4 then, right?
So there's actually 5. You got two of them right. What you missed is that there's not a third, or there's nothing that's third or based around Scar, but what there was a animated series called The Lion King's Timon and Pumbaa, which ran from 1995 to 1999. So, you know, similar to how Aladdin got a cartoon show and The Little Mermaid, that was this for Saturday mornings. But there is actually a Lion King animated series from a couple of years ago called The Lion Guard, which takes place between Lion King 1 and Lion King 2, Simba's Pride. And The Lion Guard got not only... and its own animated series, but it got its own television film called The Lion Guard Return of the Roar. So that is that's the canon universe of Lion King.
Okay. Interesting. Mm-hmm. So Tom, tell me about Everything That the Light Touches.
Well, Everything the Light Touches is our kingdom, because Lion King is a pro-monarchy movie, which means it's one of the most anti-American films that's ever been made. You know, we didn't fight to escape the tyranny of a king just for lions to tell us that, oh, the sun shines on that, it's ours. Like, who do they think they are? The sun shines everywhere, you idiots. Yes, no.
Except for that one place.
Oh, that dark, shadowy place? What is that?
Yeah.
That's,
I don't know. It's
that's inner city Philadelphia, my son. You must never go there. but yes, so for my half of the podcast, we're going to be talking about The Lion King. So Lion King on this collection is a bit more complete than Aladdin because Virgin Interactive handled both the Super Nintendo and the Sega Genesis versions. There was no, like, developer divorce in this collection.
right.
And, yeah, this is based off of the 1994 film The Lion King. And this was, as I discovered in the special features of this collection, specifically timed to be released alongside the film, or as close as it could be. You know, they were pushing to get this ready to go. And I can only assume that that was because, maybe, of the success of the Aladdin game. Because I don't know if you're familiar with your Disney history, but The Lion King was being developed in conjunction with Pocahontas. And Pocahontas was seen as, like, the project to be on. Like, that was the movie for them. And Lion King was like, I mean, we'll release this, but we don't think people are going to care as much as they're going to care about Pocahontas. And to the point where, like, animators were specifically saying, like, can you please put me on Pocahontas? I don't want to do The Lion King. So I think that there must be some kind of, like, thread to Aladdin being, as you said, the third highest selling Sega game, that they were like, well, it still needs a video game, so let's make sure we get it out around the same time. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But yes, Lion King is, it's a 2D side-scrolling kind of action platformer. You don't get to use swords, which I think would increase the quality of this game dramatically if you got to use swords. You just, you have to use basic lion powers. And the game's kind of split into two kind of chapters. The first is a series of levels. They all follow the kind of plot structure of the film. And you're playing as young Simba. And then you reach the point where Simba grows up and you're playing adult Simba. So young Simba, he can jump, he can climb. He has like a little like rolling tackle attack. But you have to like get some momentum behind it. And beyond that, the way he defeats enemies are he jumps on them. Or he can let out a little growl, which will stun some enemies, and then he can jump on them. So, as a kid, combat is a lot more kind of Mario-esque, you know, just hopping on people. And then as an adult, Simba can, like, let out a deafening roar, which can, like, insta-kill some enemies. And he can also swipe and tackle, and in some cases, he can German suplex enemies, which is always hilarious. But,
and that was one thing I kind of didn't like about Aladdin, because I kept trying to jump on top of enemies, because I believe in the Super Nintendo version you could do that. And I kept trying, I kept going back. I'm like, this isn't the same one. It's not the same one. Like, it was more hand-to-hand combat with Aladdin.
Okay.
So it's nice to know that there was alternative ways that you can eliminate enemies in your game.
And then across the levels, there's a number of collectibles. There are bugs which restore your health or give you certain kind of temporary buffs. There's also like one-hit kill bugs, kind of like the poison mushroom in the Mario series. There's little one-up tokens, and there's even insta-continue tokens, because, like, you know, there were game over chances in this game. So if you had these little tokens, Rafiki would let you keep playing from where you were instead of like sending you back to the beginning of the game. And now that I have gone over all the mechanics, I want to say that this is the worst game I've played in the history of the podcast. I hate this game. I hate that I bought it digitally and therefore can't return it. barring that Aladdin might turn out to be good, I still, you know, I'm just saying, internally, I wish I had called Aladdin, but...
I gave you the option.
You did, and I thought I had fond memories of this as a child, although like I also had fond memories, well, quote unquote fond memories of its difficulty, but I assumed like I'm a man now, like I'm a grown ass man, I can tackle this game, it can't be that hard.
Let me ask you a question though about that.
Yeah,
quick. You have fond memories, But are those memories only of the first two levels in the game?
Yeah, basically. I think I'm just, I think when I was like, oh, I'm going to do Lion King, I think I was just sucked in by the feeling that those memories elicited. And again, right. I was like, well, how hard can they be now? I'm an adult, you know? So, but I think, I feel that this game is just fundamentally broken. And you mentioned in your Aladdin review, you know, the difficulty was in place because, yes, like back in the day, certain games weren't very long. So they compensated for that by making them hard so that kids felt like they were getting, you know, a full experience out, even though a game could be probably completed very quickly. And this is designed in a way where I am just like, oh, you had nothing, so you jacked up the difficulty. I'll go through it like bit by bit because there's a point where like it's not a difficulty curve, it's a difficulty like sheer flat wall. And once you run into it, it's like, all right, this is so frustrating. So you start in this level, it's the Pride Lands, you know, and it's very free and open. The enemies are kind of just like simple hop on them or stun them and kill them. It's very much there to get you familiar with the mechanics of how Simba can, when he jumps, he can attach to and dangle off certain ledges, you know, showing you how he can roll tackle, things like that. It's all introductory. And I actually was like, oh, wow, that's pretty good. Then you get to the second level, which is similar to how you said Aladdin had a version of Friend Like Me. This is a playable version of Just Can't Wait to Be King. And this was where it starts getting tricky. You have to jump on a lot of animals' heads, and the animals are very picky. Some of them will like instantly fling you off. Some will like just tilt their head back enough for you to just get thrown into the water and die. The level is built upon you have to redirect these monkeys, which will throw you in a certain direction. So you have to like yell at them to scare them, and they'll change the direction that they'll throw you. So it's a bit of time figuring out what the order is. And then beyond that, it's just like, you know, avoiding obstacles, things like that. The third level, though, is where I really, my blood pressure was going through the roof. It's the elephant. It's the elephant graveyard. And it's a bad level.
Okay.
It does not, in my opinion, make it. It's the first level in the game where the objective is not to just get to the finish line. In order to finish the elephant graveyard, you have to defeat every enemy in the map, and the game does not make it clear. And the enemies are all very tough. You have the hyenas, who have certain attack and weakness patterns, and given how like flimsy Simba's health is, it's very frustrating. And you're usually fighting two hyenas at a time, so it's very frustrating. And then there's a couple, like, buzzards, and I'm like, oh, yeah, of course, the iconic movie Buzzards that totally existed in the Elephant Graveyard. Yeah, sure, whatever. But I spent a lot of time running around this level before I realized it was just a big circle, and then I was, like, killing the enemies out of frustration, and then I realized, oh, that's the goal. Okay. Not great. But there's also...
Yeah, you would think that they would have some sort of thing at the beginning of the level telling you eliminate all enemies or something.
Well, some of them do, but this one, I don't feel like it communicated it. I don't know. This level, also because of how much time I spent in it, kind of almost made me hate the song Be Prepared, which is one of my all-time Disney jams, and I was upset that something could make me hate Be Prepared, but, you know, you can only hear the MIDI version of it so many times before you're like, ugh. But, and there's one specific thing in this level. There is, so one of these collectible bugs that I mentioned earlier, one of them is in like the top right corner of the map, and you can only get it by doing this climbing challenge of bouncing between ledges as these little one-hit kill water geysers rise up under Simba, right? So you have to jump very fast and very specifically in order to get up to this corner. But what I came to discover is that after you get onto like the ledge that the bug is on, the water has risen to a point that you can't get back down. So you are literally stuck there unless you choose to jump into the water and let it kill you. And I tried everything. There's no like in-game physical thing that you can do to get out of that corner. save for killing yourself or using the rewind feature to get out of it. So that's
just like in the movie.
Yeah, just like in the movie where Simba had to confront his greatest enemy, water.
I mean, cats hate water.
I mean, lions are supposed to be stronger than cats. This is inexcusable. but then we have the iconic stampede level where Simba is kind of running towards the camera and the wildebeest will like charge up in patterns. It's very much like, have you ever played the Batman animated series game?
Yeah.
You know, the Mad Hatter level where, you have to jump over, playing cards that kind of are flung from the background of the foreground.
Absolutely. Yep.
Yeah. It's very much like that. I was actually,
like I said, once again, another great 16-bit game.
Yeah. Yeah. Another great licensed game, you know, that too. But I was shocked at how quick I actually beat this. Got through it a lot more easily than I thought I would. And then you do a level called Simba's Exile, which is where I stopped, quote unquote, playing the game. Let me explain. It was somehow worse than the Elephant Graveyard because you have to make your way through this maze of like caves and small tunnels. And there are these always present falling rocks, and they don't fall in any specific pattern. Basically, if you stand in a spot for too long, they'll just fall out of the sky and land on you. And this is really frustrating when you're trying to climb ledges, because if you're on a ledge for too long, the rocks will just generate and hit you and knock you off the ledge. So it's not even something where, like, it's, like, timing or a pattern. It's literally the game saying, like, oh, you're standing still. I'm going to throw this at you. And it's very frustrating. And there's just, like, other kind of obstacles that really get into your skin. And this is the point where I was saying before. It's, like, there's, to me, it's the 90s practice of we have to make the game hard in order to drag this out. So this is the point where I started using something that this Disney Classics Collection has, and it's called, it's basically you can watch the game play itself and then jump into it at any point that you want so that you can like get around some obstacles. Is that like the least pro gamer thing ever? Maybe, but my patience was only so thin, and I was not in the mood to have a blood pressure spike in my mid-30s over a video game.
Yeah,
so
no, I get it. Yeah. I did see the watch and play feature there, and I was like, oh, that's kind of nice. Maybe I might go in and look at that for like if it's worth going in and playing Lion King again to completion.
Yeah. I was grateful for that feature. It's how I eventually got to the end of the game. The adult Simba parts are a lot more fun, especially the combat. It's very satisfying to be able to actually attack enemies instead of having to mostly run away from them, which is what you do as young Simba. But yeah, just overall,
I was gonna say, do you think the game got more enjoyable when you became adult Simba?
I would say it does, because it does change pace a little bit, and I think it's a better pace. So, yeah, I think maybe this could have been better overall. If, like, what if the first half of the game you were Mufasa, for example, and, like, every level is, like, save Simba, and then you transition into adult Simba, and it kind of makes sense as, like, oh, you're adult lion in both halves. I don't know. They made the choices they made. But something I just want to... A couple, like, just closing facts I want to throw out, or opinions, or whatever, is I really admired the way that this game preserved and presented the soundtrack, because The Lion King has a killer soundtrack. All the levels are set to tunes from the movie, and, you know, for 16-bit audio quality, this is all really good. It even has some vocal clips from the movie, so you got 16-bit James Earl Jones and 16-bit Jeremy Irons. It's really good. Jonathan Taylor Thomas also does all the like sound bites for young Simba. So like anytime he's like, ow, or cool, that's JTT, baby. But overall, I think my biggest takeaway from the game is actually a quote from that GamePro gave the game upon its release. And they said that the game has outstanding graphics and audio, but it's a repetitive, tedious game that's too daunting for beginning players and too annoying for experienced ones. And that's what I really feel like this game comes down to, is that it's not difficult in like a rewarding way, like say Donkey Kong Country is, you know, where like it's difficult, but as you figure it out, it becomes more rewarding. This is just difficult. And right. It bummed me out.
It's more punishing because you bought the game.
Yeah. Like, if my parents had bought me this in the early 90s and I didn't like it, it's like, well, it's not my money. But nowadays.
So do you think that The Lion King deserves to pretty much only be watchable?
Yeah. Just watch the 1994 version. You don't need any other version of Lion King.
Not even watching someone play the game?
I mean, you can watch the gameplay itself, I guess. I don't know. I've seen speedruns of this performed before, and I used to think, like, oh, that's really impressive. And now that I've actually played it, I'm like, oh, that's really impressive. You managed, like, the fact that you bullied your way through this hard game and speedran it. Right. Like, I'm actually more impressed by the speedruns right. now. But yeah, barring my experience with Aladdin, which I'm hoping will be more positive, I could not recommend the purchase of this. In this form, I don't know.
Right, not even for the special features.
Special features are
like if Aladdin was. If Aladdin was a good game, and you get the special features in Aladdin and the special features for Lion King, would you consider it still
on sale? Because this, the two options I had to buy it were the $50 special edition with the cases that are replicas of the Sega Genesis and Super Nintendo boxes.
Which I bought.
Nice. Which one did you get?
The Sega Genesis one. That's just because I like the clamshell. And the inside of it's so nice. It's like all like foamed inside there, and there's a cutout for the little Switch cartridge.
Nice. I would have gotten that too. It was just like a, you know, responsible adult decision.
So, oh, I get it.
Yeah, but so I bought it digitally at $30. I would say only get this, barring that Aladdin's good and with the wealth of special features, which are really cool, I would get this if it'd have to go on sale for under $20, personally.
Okay. Fair enough.
Josh, overall, this blast into the past, good for you?
Yeah. Bad for you?
Yeah, but I guess we'll trade experiences and see what happens. But I hope that our listeners, specifically our listener Craig, who requests this episode, can enjoy this little audible dive into gaming history. Thank you for reaching out.
Well, that's all the time that we can spend in the past, so thanks for listening. Subscribe to A Cast of the Past on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. And stay up to date with the Cast of the Past by making sure you follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. There you can be the first to know when new episodes drop, as well as joining in on discussions on all things gaming. And until next time, we'll see you in the future.